Welcome to an episode of Crippled by Culture, where we talk about everything in life and relate it to the disabled and chronically ill community. My name is Sean Gold, and I am an author, advocate, and nonverbal public speaker for the disabled community. To provide a quick visual description for accessibility, I am a black man with a white a tracheostomy breathing tube in my neck. I am wearing a green camo shirt. And the person off camera who is that you are hearing is speaking for me. This video is of a Zoom call with me and the person talking for me off camera. And my guest is in the other box next to it. Today, I would like to thank Josh Rudig for being my voice in this episode. In this episode, we are talking about the intersections of disability, media, representation, and humor.
Before we get any further into the interview, I want to give a shout out to our partnering nonprofit festival for the series, Festability. As the media director, I help organize a wonderful event in St. Louis at the Missouri History Museum. We have so many activities and vendors set up all over with an amazing headliner for our main stage each year. It is the best event in St. Louis to celebrate your disability unapologetically while celebrating the Americans with Disabilities Act. Make sure you come out if you're nearby. Check out the link in the description to learn more. Thank you, Festability, for sponsoring the series. Now, back to the show.
Now let's get to today's amazing guest. Danielle Connolly is a rare disease and disability advocate, content creator, and business and marketing professional. Being born with a muscle disease that still has an unknown origin after 29 years has given Danielle many unique life experiences that set the course of her various ambitions. After gaining her MBA and obtaining employment as an analyst, she took her first vacation with friends as an adult and realized that she is more capable of traveling than she realized. Upon returning from the trip, she swiftly got her own mobility scooter and started planning more adventures. The idea of documenting these adventures and giving accessibility reviews came about, and then many other ideas for content followed. Thus, Danielle Levates was born. Danielle Levates is a play on her name combined with Elevates, because the content is all about elevating ideas about disability and rare disease through humor, education, and adventures. Danielle, thank you for being here today. How are you doing?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm doing well. How about you?
We're doing just fine. Would you mind giving a visual description of yourself, please?
Sure. I'm a white woman in my late 20s, and I have straight brown hair, and I'm wearing a maroon shirt, and then I'm sitting on a gray recliner with a light yellow background.
All right, thank you. All right, first, do you identify with having a disability or chronic illness?
I'd say both. Because I was born with a muscle disease, and for many years I kind of more related to having a chronic illness because I just felt like I have this disease. So that's what I'm more related to, and I kind of had a more narrow view of what disability was. Like I had seen, muscle disease like camps through the MDA, and so I kind of didn't participate as much because I kind of didn't want to intrude. I kind of viewed disability as, you're a wheelchair user. But then as I understood more about the community, I felt more comfortable not only getting involved and identifying as part of that community.
All right. So how does your disability affect your everyday life?
Yeah, so like I do have weakness, fatigue, all that. I can't like run or jump. I can walk, but I like I mentioned, like if I'm going further on an adventure, I will use a scooter. Now that I have one, like if I were to have gone somewhere years ago before I got my own, I would have been like pushed in like a manual wheelchair that would have just been borrowed from the place I went to. But as far as like my day to day, it's a lot of it is more affected by the chronic illness component. So yeah, so like the fatigue and like migraines, I have like some dysautonomia, like that kind of stuff slows me down a bit more than the physical, disability components that I will notice if I find somewhere that's inaccessible. But the day to day stuff is more related to the chronic illness kind of causing, roadblocks, I guess you could say.
How old were you when you were diagnosed?
So it's been like a tricky journey. So I was like when I was 8 months old, they started doing like some testing, like muscle biopsies and all that, and then they didn't really know what was going on. So they did another muscle biopsy when I was five, and then at that point they were like, you probably have mitochondrial disease, but we can't like diagnose it for sure. So I had that probable diagnosis until I was like 20, and then they did genetic testing again, and then they're like, instead of saying you probably have mitochondrial disease, and they're like, it actually turns out you probably don't, but we can't say for sure. So it's tricky because it's technically undiagnosed, but it is definitely a muscle disease, but it's still a little bit of a medical mystery.
So there are, you feel like there are definitely things not diagnosed that, yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely still live with that kind of component of being undiagnosed, but I definitely, relate to a lot of like the muscle disease things since that's kind of just the broader, diagnosis that I have.
Did you have to go through your own sort of internalized ableism?
Yeah, definitely. So like I had mentioned before, I was like hesitant to be part of the disability community because I didn't want to take up space, and I would say mine, like if you had to rate it, it's probably like moderate. Like, the chronic illness components definitely kind of add to the moderate, level. And so I didn't want to take up space or, take the mic from anyone with like severe disabilities because I know that, they face harder challenges just for a variety of reasons, accessibility and then just society's viewpoint. So that was kind of like I was guilt tripping myself not to be involved in the community. So that was like some ableism internally that I was dealing with. And it was also like the hesitancy to use or get my own mobility scooter because I don't use it every day. So I didn't want people to think like I was using it as a prop just when I'm having fun, you know what I mean? Which is kind of foolish because I was just punishing myself. And then also I was kind of trying to I was really pushing myself hard academically in a field. Like I first went down my undergrad's a science degree, and I went down that field because I could do the schoolwork. It was just the career in the medical field was way too strenuous for me. But I think part of I do want to make a difference in the world, which was a big part of it. But the other part of it is I went down like a traditionally prestigious path because I wanted people to see that first rather than the disability because I felt like, people really noticed that first, and I felt kind of like an outsider for it. So instead of me for many years being like, no, you guys are the ones with the problem because you feel uncomfortable for something that's I can't even help it, and having a disability is just a part of the human experience that some people experience sooner rather than later. Instead of feeling like that, I felt like, yeah, I'm the one that needs to make other people feel comfortable, and I'm gonna do that by XYZ, being successful, being this, being that, so they feel more comfortable with it rather than me calling out their ableism. I just internalized it.
How has the journey toward its inner acceptance been like?
So it's, been a journey, and part of that is, you know, understanding that I'm not the one responsible for, you know, making people feel comfortable and accepting me, you know. So I have to accept myself first, which is, you know, a journey. So that I have, you know, I always like recommend people like don't necessarily like now that I've like created content like put something online unless you're like healed from it, you know, because there are like trolls that will like, you know, be rude and all that. So it's like if you're not healed from it, you're gonna get double hurt by it. But so I'm only mainly just post stuff online that I'm already like healed from. However, it's a process. So even if I like some of the content I post online is just awkward situations that have happened when I get out of a chair and people make like a odd kind of comment, and then I kind of add a humor spin to it. Like I'm picturing myself with like a mockumentary crew, like on The Office or Abbott Elementary. And so as much as I can laugh at it, still I'll still sometimes feel uncomfortable when I get out of a chair with a stranger. Like, what are they gonna say? You know? So it's a process, but definitely as I've gotten older, started to care less about who doesn't accept me and then be more appreciative for who does.
It sounds very interesting. So, as for your involvement in the disability community, why should people and companies start catering towards disabled individuals when trying to get business and sell products?
Well, I definitely think there's a huge market. Like, you know, businesses want to think about money first. And so that's where I always lean towards, you know, like to get them to pay attention because, you know, if you just say to a company like, oh, it would be nice if you did this, you know, they're probably not gonna do it unless they want like good PR or something. Like for instance, I was just in a leadership program with a great organization called Creative Ladder, which is a program for people in the advertising and marketing spaces who are underrepresented. And then if they're like early career, so it's like a leadership program. And we had to do a class project at the end of the program for so it was like a pretend one, but you know, you pick an organization and then you try to make an initiative that will not only make the money but help a community. So then my group actually picked the one that I suggested, and then that was to I picked a hotel chain, and then it was to make it the most accessible hotel chain possible in order to be a leader in the hospitality space. And there was like so much evidence that like I'm like, this is such a good idea. We tried to like invite the representatives from the hotel there, but I don't know if they got the invitation or what. But like basically just to name some facts, in 2024, it's estimated that disabled people will spend $60 billion a year on travel. And that's like similar rates to non-disabled people, but there's this idea that disabled people don't, you know, do leisure activities, they don't spend money, which is not true. And but despite spending this much money, like a recent survey found that like 96% of disabled people surveyed did not feel like their accessibility needs were met by hotels. And I can attest to this, like even the accessible rooms a lot of the times are not, you know, up to standard even for the ADA, and also missing some things that would just be smart design ideas that don't actually cost extra money. So I definitely think just the money, like there's a lot of money, it's a big community, and I feel like we spread the word really fast as a community when something good's happening. So it's like you know, it's I think it's just smart business, you know.
Jumping back a bit, what do you think you've learned that stays with you on a daily basis from the disabled community or a specific disabled person?
That's a good question. I feel like I learn a little something all the time. Like I really like following creators that don't have the same disability as me, because then I feel like it adds strength to like all the accessibility arguments that we have. Like just now, like I, you know, talk about like physical disabilities as they relate to me, but if I talk to someone who is blind, I'll like just add strength to whatever I'm saying, you know, and learning from that. And then it's just you know, I think the history of disability is important, and we're not taught it in school, and that's a big detriment to building the community as well. Because I know for myself, I'm the only one in my family who's disabled. So, you know, it's like you're part of a community that, you know, other people in your family, and maybe like friends and community can't relate to. So being the only one is hard. So when you have someone in the media, whether it's social media or on TV or movies, it really helps. Like, and then one thing that I think always sticks with me, if I had to pick like one quote, is you know, I had watched Crip Camp later in life, and you know, that's one of those movies every disabled person tells people to watch, and it's great when I hear non-disabled people have watched it, you know, on their own accord. But when Judy Heumann says, like, if I have to be grateful for an accessible bathroom, when am I ever going to be equal in society? And I think that not enough has changed in society since she said that, and she helped propel so much change with the ADA, but we still have a long way to go, because I think a lot of people in society still feel that way, like disabled people are supposed to be grateful for every little thing, and if we are supposed to be grateful for just the bare minimum, we will never be equal in society. But I think there's still a long way to go, which is so that that quote just makes me feel like, you know, I want to continue contributing where I can.
Yeah, that is a very great movie. And I love following other people with different disabilities. It's very cool to learn how other people are living with that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, how do you think you combined disability and marketing? Like, what do you tell people to help them understand that disabled people are like marketable?
Yeah, like in my day-to-day job now, I don't really do that. Like it would be cool to do that, you know, in the future at some point. But yeah, I always like go back to like just the money figures, because that's like what gets people to pay attention. And not only that, just like the fact like Nielsen is like a big marketing research company. They have found that disabled customers tend to have more brand loyalty than non-disabled customers. So that's like another big point where, you know, and I can say that too. Like, you know, it's not every person is like, oh, you do one good thing for the disabled community, I'm going to be loyal to you for life. It's not like that. And, you know, obviously I'm not like speaking for every disabled person, but if a company is making concerted efforts to make their products or their experiences or venues accessible, it makes sense that we are going to be more loyal to them. Like, I feel like a good example of this is Disney World. Like, not every disabled person likes Disney World, but a lot of people do, because they tend to put more effort into making rides and their infrastructure accessible more than other tourist destinations.
In what ways do you think this can improve like disability in the media?
Yeah, like I definitely feel like now more than ever, there's like more hope involved, but there's still a long way to go. Like, so that was kind of the reason I felt more good about making content creation channels, because I'm like, oh, there's like a lot of people doing this, but I still felt I had something unique to say. Like, I never want to be someone that's like repeating, you know, what everyone else is doing, but I feel like you're seeing more organizations pop up that are looking for, you know, the unique voices, like and then just the existence of them has given me more hope. Like, just to name a few, like the One in Four Coalition, I believe it's called. I know it's like One in Four. And then Making Space is another one. I'm definitely gonna miss a few, but just the fact that they're like, you know, existing and looking for, you know, disabled talent is hopeful. But, you know, there's still a long way to go, because I don't think that the general society really looks at like a non-disabled actor playing a disabled person with like, you know, like any type of like shock or horror, like what are they doing? That role should be for a disabled person. Like, I don't think that's on the non-disabled community's radar at the moment. So once that gets on the radar and that's a thing of the past, then I'll think a lot of progress has been made. But that still an ongoing process. But one quote I heard the other day, it wasn't necessarily for the disabled community, just for like any underrepresented community, was you can't be it if you can't see it. And I think that's really important. Like when people say, oh, why should there be diversity in media? Like if all movies with white people are making money, then what's the big deal? Like it's like, well, it's like, you know, it's important to see a diverse group of people on the TV that actually represents the world, you know, because it's like we all are unique individuals and have opportunities to do things like it was even interesting. Sofia Vergara said the other day that because she's on the press tour for Griselda, like, you know, she was looking for a variety of roles, but she felt like because she has an accent, she could never be, you know, a certain number of roles. Like she even listed scientists and like the people in the comments that were, you know, people I agreed with were saying like, you know, that's sad because I know a lot of scientists who have accents, you know, and I think that's the reality of the world is that a lot of scientists do have accents, but, you know, people who are casting movies and doing all that kind of have a narrow view of the world sometimes, just thinking about what's always been done. But I think that definitely needs to change.
Yeah, sometimes you have to repeat that kind of information to people to get the point across.
Yeah, definitely.
And people, even in our community, bring lots of different audience demographics and
Yeah, definitely. And like, you know, in the disability community, there's obviously a lot of intersectionality because anyone can be disabled at any time, which is what I also try to remind people. Like, you know, the two facts that are so simple but say so much, people like don't get it. It's like, you know, like if you live old enough, you will be disabled unless you like die prematurely. And the other one is anyone is just one illness or injury away from being disabled. But even you just say this to people and they still feel like they're so removed from disability. They're just like, oh, no, that doesn't, okay, yeah, but not me. It's like, yes, you and everyone else, you know, but it's just, I don't know, it's hard to get this idea through people's heads because they feel like it's almost like they think disabled people are just like another class of human or like non-human. Like, you know, I felt like an alien. I always said a lot during like school, like, you know, sometimes like just like people, you know, kind of treat me just like they don't know how to act, you know? So yeah, it's a lot of work, but takes a village, I guess, as they say.
We were talking about disabled people in like the media. Do you think we can expand disability exposure beyond just TV and movies?
Yeah, definitely. Like even, you know, you doing this podcast is like a great example of, you know, disabled people in media, like, you know, and then even like I saw like an initiative, you know, making space trying to have like people on like news broadcasts, like sports commentary. And I think that's great. And it's just seeing people in all types of roles, like, you know, on the media, like not just like scripted, but you know, I used to always say like, oh, I could win the show Big Brother, but I could never do the competitions. Like, you know what I mean? It's like it's just kind of looking at things differently. Like, you know, like and even like you know, you'll see like this is where it's still very common for society to be ableist and like no one to call them out because I always joke like, I don't joke. It's a dark joke, I guess you could say. It's like no one even knows the word ableist, so it's like they're not going to be offended if you're like, that's ableist, because they're like, what is that? You know, it's not like a commonly it's not a commonly known word. And like you'll see like political cartoons and you know they'll like make fun of how old like some of our politicians are by like giving them like walkers and the cartoons and like that and like show them like near the White House. And it's like, That just is like very harmful because it kind of says like if someone has a mobility aid or a disability, like they're less capable of their at their job, which I do think a lot of people believe deep down inside. And it is rare to see, you know, people in positions of power, you know, in politics or just other positions within the media that have a visible disability without their credentials being criticized.
So far, we've only seen like white male disabled actors in like leading roles on TV. How do you think that kind of narrow view of disability can be harmful, like long term?
Yeah, like I definitely feel you know, it's part of that need, not need, but like I relate to like, oh, we want you to feel comfortable with disability. So they may feel like, oh, people are used to white men in the starring role. So in order to make them feel comfortable with disability, we'll have a white man with the disability. Like we can't have too many, you know, like you know, intersectionalities. Like I'm just obviously being sarcastic, but these are probably actual conversations that go on behind the scenes, you know. So and I do think it's harmful because it creates like more, you know, it creates more of like a okay, like you can only complain about one thing type of thing in society. Like it's like okay, like okay, you can't have too many identities because then we're gonna get sick of it. You know, like that's I'm not, you know, saying me, I'm just talking about like what a troll may say, you know. So and it's horrible because we should be accepting like all parts of people, you know, because we're all unique individuals. And if you talk to anyone on an individual level, they want to be known for more than just one thing. So I think when you kind of don't allow that in media, it kind of transcends into everyday society too.
Yeah, a lot of people do kind of believe like that stuff you were saying before about disabled people like in politics or whatever, like not being able to do your jobs. Like a lot of people have hated that. John Fetterman is a disabled senator, and a lot of people think he's sort of ineligible because of like his speech impairment.
Yeah, absolutely. I did see that as well. And I think he was, I don't know too much about it, but I think he was open with some like mental health struggles as well. And then people were like, oh, are you like mentally fit for the role? And it's like, technically, that should have made him more like relatable since like everyone can relate to mental health, whether they admit it or not. Like that's like a big thing. And, you know, it's like I joke like some people I know, they think like I always say, like, well, everyone could benefit from going to therapy at one point, but then, you know, there's some people that are like, therapy's for crazy people. And it's like, those are the ones that probably would benefit the most. And then, you know, people who have to deal with them are like the reason some people go to therapy. And then, so, you know, it's just like, I think society has become very snarky. And they like look at a reason to pick on people and put them down. And rather than being like, thanks for, you know, being vulnerable and relatable, they kind of don't like that. And it's like, I don't know if it's fear, like they want their like political people to be like strong so no one's afraid of them. But it's like, that's not, you know, real, even real.
Back to the entertainment stuff. What sort of shows and movies would you like to see, like about our community, like comedies, romance, or something else like that?
Yeah, like I think definitely like everything where, you know, it's 'cause so much of it is tragic, you know, and a lot of that has to do with a non-disabled person playing a disabled person. So I'm like, if it has to be tragic, at least have a disabled person playing it because it's so bad when I did go on a rant about this in Disability Pride Month, 'cause I was in a class where we were discussing the movie Million Dollar Baby, and that movie was made by non-disabled people, but it's about a disabled person and it has to do with like euthanasia. And I'm like, how can you make a movie about such a serious like topic and you're not even part of the community? Like that still blows my mind. And of course it won Oscars and all that. But so I think just like a variety is good. Like I like would love to write something myself, and like I have like had an idea for like years, and I'll like work on it here and there. But like I just I'm not like a natural writer of dialogue. I can write like essays and blogs and stuff, but just dialogue I have like a real hard time with. But like I really would love to see like a romantic comedy, because like I feel like that tackles like two things at once, where because you know I always say like people don't expect to see disabled people in like places like higher education, the workforce, like dating. They're like shocked when they see a disabled person. Not everyone, of course, but like a lot of it's like, oh, like, you know, like I always joke, like, who let you in? You know, like not really, but like they're just not expecting anyone disabled to be there. So I think a romantic comedy, I'd love to see the most, because one, I've never seen one with like a disabled lead. And also, I think it tackles two things at once, that one, disabled people are, you know, just as, you know, quality of partners as a non-disabled person. And also comedy, even just like a straight comedy, I'd love to see, like, just, you know, even no romance involved. 'Cause I feel like people really feel like disabled people aren't able to be funny, which is like the exact opposite of what I believe. I think disabled people have, like, in my experience, have like some of like the driest, like darkest humor, you know what I mean? Like, and I think society feels like, oh, disabled people are going to be offended, you know, which I don't think is true at all, in my opinion. Like, I always joke, like, you know, if people are like say the wrong thing about disability, I'm like, a disabled person's less likely to like call you out and be like, you offended me. They're more likely to, like, in my experience, like laugh kind of behind your back a little bit, which I think is like fair game. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of my content on social media. I kind of just like poke fun at it rather than like, you know, cancel someone for saying the wrong thing. Like, if they're not, if you say something truly like heinous and awful, like, yeah. But like, if you like say something you didn't know, like, you know, was a, like, if you say differently abled, it's like, we don't love that phrase, but I'm not gonna be like, you're a bad person for saying that. You know, I might just kind of chuckle and be like, oh, they think they're doing something, you know, but just say disability, it's fine. So yeah, so I definitely think humor is like a big one that I'd like to get across.
Yeah, I always love the show Special.
Oh,
Never really
okay.
seen that one.
I have heard of it, but I didn't like watch it fully, but I'll have to look into it more.
Well, tell me about Danielle Vates. How'd you come up with the whole idea and the name?
Yeah, so I came up with the idea because originally, like, I don't actually watch vlogs, but I know like a lot of people do, and I like editing videos and all that. So after I had gone on vacation, I'm like, oh, it'd be kind of fun to like try vlogging, you know, because I already like doing it. And I'm like, worst scenario, they'll be fun to watch. And then, but I realized it's like really hard to like break into that and have any success, you know. So I'm like, well, I might as well just give it a shot, like, and advertise it. Like, to advertise it, I felt I'll have to make short form content. And then so, you know, I didn't have enough short form content because I, you know, have a day job, and I don't, you know, have, you know, I'm not independently wealthy, so I can't travel every day, you know. But so I went along with that like mockumentary idea, where I was just writing down just kind of cringy or awkward moments from my life, and then I was like, let me reenact them. And then suddenly I just had like a whole list of ideas. And then at first I was like, oh, like if I start something, like what if I run out of ideas? But you know, society does enough things on a regular basis that I experience individually, and then, you know, systemically in the media, that I have enough material to comment on. So I'm like, okay. And then I thought, eh, if it doesn't take off, at least it's almost like a portfolio of sorts, since I like am like trying to like break more into marketing. So yeah, so then that's how I kind of came about it. And then Danielle Vates, I was like, I just kept asking people, and then the only idea I ever thought of was, because I was like, let me just combine something with Danielle, because I just kind of wanted to use my first name, and then just Danielle Vates was the only one that stuck.
What kind of trips and adventures have you documented so far?
So far I kind of just started, so I live in the Boston area, like started Because it's like you get better as you go on. Like they say, like, don't let your ego stop you from starting, which I think is a good thing. Like, the first blog you write, not gonna be as good as like the 10th one, but you got to start somewhere, So I just started locally at like museums and stuff like that in Boston. And luckily the museums around Boston are pretty accessible. But I do say like the good, bad, and ugly, you know what I mean? Like, 'cause sometimes I don't plan ahead as much as I should, and I'll like run into a situation like that I could have avoided potentially if I planned ahead. So mostly around Boston, but then I have gone to like Disney World. I did like a Disney cruise, and then the Disney cruise was the best, most accessible room I've ever been in because they had an automatic door button in the hotel, which was on the cruise ship, which was the first I've ever seen in a hotel in an accessible room. But that made a huge difference because I was able to go in and out of the room on my own and didn't have to wait for someone to open the door for me. And then I did go to a rare disease conference in San Diego in the fall. So yeah, so those are the main ones. I did like a day trip to New York City. So I'm like trying to plan something else for the summer, but to be decided.
What do you think has been like one of the best experiences for f finding accessibility on your trips?
So yeah, like I mentioned, like the cruise, the Disney cruise ship was the best room I've ever had, and that was my first time on a cruise. And the Disney cruises tend to be a bit more money than other cruise ships, but it's good because they're all inclusive, so all the food and all that's included. But I was hesitant to go on a cruise with a chronic illness because you hear a lot about like norovirus and stuff. So I went in the summer, when it's not, fall time, like, flu season. And then I did a short trip, just like 3 nights. So it was like a sampler, but it ended up being great because like everything is in like one area. Like you're not going too far. And if you need a rest, the ship's right there. You can go back to it. So that honestly was the most accessible experience that I had been on for a trip, I'd say.
Have you had any bad experiences on these trips?
So luckily, knock on wood, I've stayed pretty healthy. Like one time when I was younger on a trip, I did get sick, so that's like a bummer. But as far as accessibility goes, when I went to San Diego, the room I stayed in, it was an accessible room, but it was just like one thing after another where just like it was like, didn't have the button on the door, which is not required under the ADA. It just makes a huge difference. And then the doors would always get stuck, so I'd be afraid when I was opening the door in the bathroom, I'd slip on the floor. And then thankfully I didn't. But just like little things like the knobs, like nothing was easy. And then the detachable shower head didn't work, so it's like you're kind of getting cold, like if you sit on the bench. And of course, one thing that's common people complain about that I just don't understand is like the shampoo and like accessible showers and hotels. Why don't they just put it near the bench so you can reach it? Why are they putting it on the opposite end of the shower? Which I did experience there. And then the cherry on top was that they had like the lights that turn off automatically if someone like hasn't been in a room. Which went off after I was in the shower for only like 5 minutes, absolute pitch dark, couldn't even see the hand in front of my face. And then I'm like trying to like wave outside the shower, it would not turn on. So I had to get all the way out in the pitch black. So it was kind of like a safety issue because I'm like, why would you have that feature in a bathroom? And I could see maybe after an hour, but yeah, so I was like not thrilled with that accessible room,
Have you ever experienced like a lack of accessibility that was like so big it was almost like comical?
That one I'd say like when the lights went off was like I was like okay, like that was kind of comical.
Yeah, I figured that might be the one.
I'm trying to think of like another scenario where I'm sure maybe I've like blocked it out of my mind, but like definitely like situations where like, well, I guess one, this is like less of like a tourist thing and more just like an everyday thing that I kind of learned from. So now I use paratransit. But when I was like a teenager, trying to explore the city with friends, I'd try to use the public transportation. And this is actually my My most successful reel on Instagram was like, it's just titled like "Point of View: Like Disabled Person Tries to Use Reserve Seat on the Subway." And you know, if you use a subway, you see it has like the blue sign on it, like reserve seat. But I kind of poked fun at it because it's like in that clip that I made, I was like explaining my life to the person, like, "Oh, you don't need to tell me if you have a disability, but I do." But like, you know, I normally wouldn't ask, but because like a lot of times non-disabled people just sit in them because the trains are so crowded. But then in the clip, I have a friend that was my body double that just fell when I'm in the middle of explaining. Because I always joke, you have like 15 seconds to get this reserve seat. You're expected to explain your whole life to the person sitting on the seat. That person may have a disability themselves. So now you have people fighting over limited resources. Like, and then most disabled people are like, "Oh, no, I don't want you have it." And then all of a sudden, it's a safety issue. And then that was kind of based on a real life event because I did fall on the train. And that's when I learned, like, okay, I can't use the train. And I was with friends too. Like, I had two people trying to reserve a seat for me. And it was impossible. And I did fall on the train. And it was like, so that was like just like a general experience of a disabled person trying to get a seat. But we always joke, like, we have to reenact that moment because it was funny. But I'm like, we have to like think of it in a way that's actually funny because it was such a disaster that we laughed about it. But I don't know if other people laughed because I fell on the train. I was like wearing a dress, so I felt like it like poofed out, and like my friend was like, "You looked like a cupcake that just like plopped on the ground." And then so they're trying to pick me up, but the train's moving, and then my legs are really weak, so I can't get up. I'm falling on the ground, and they're nervous laughing. But so people probably think we're just like teenagers goofing off, but no. And then so my friend was like, "Can someone give her a seat?" Like she's in the middle of like holding me up, and then someone did. And then, but it was just chaos. And then I'm like, okay, I'm retiring from using this type of public transportation. So yeah, that was it. It was a mess, you know. And it's just the system for the reserve seats are just so unrealistic. And I think that was my most successful clip because I had so many comments from people who could relate with like their own horror stories and people harassing them for using the reserve seat. And just yeah, that whole public transportation thing is not too good.
How do you manage like inaccessibility in places like bathrooms, hotel rooms, other public spots, you know?
So like luckily for me, I can usually make it work. Like, you know, unless like a toilet's super low, I do okay. So unless it was like unusually low, like sometimes it's really low and I'm like, okay, this is pushing it. But I can use like a regular stall. So I do have that privilege where I don't have to like plan ahead and like call specifically because I can typically make it work. But you know, when a place is only like I can do stairs too. Like I do get fatigued, but I can as long as I don't have like a backpack or anything. So I do have that privilege where I have more options to wing it. But you know, it's definitely thinking ahead. Like for a hotel though, like I'll call to see like, 'cause like if I'm just staying at a hotel normally, I'm like doing some sort of adventure during the day where I'm more fatigued. So I definitely need like an accessible shower because you know my legs will be weaker. So one time I didn't do that, and then I definitely noticed like the grooves in the shower, like because you know sometimes they make it for like a tub, so like they it's not like completely flat. So I was like, I did feel like unsafe with that. So that was like a lesson to me, like you know, because it's sometimes you know in the disabled community we're like, oh, we want to save that for someone more disabled, but you know in the case of like hotels and stuff, like you know there's a set number of rooms for a reason, and you have to, you know, be smart about using the resources. But because everything's so scarce, we do have that like in that mindset, like, oh, I'll save it for someone more disabled, which is, you know, harmful that we're competing over limited resources within the community.
Do you have any advice for disabled people who want to start traveling like you do?
Yeah, like I definitely think to start small helps. Like, so you know, like I did you know, local stuff first and like just seeing how you do like on a full day and then like seeing how you do like on an overnight. And then also it's like not being afraid to ask for help too. Like, I don't like push it to be like, oh, I have to travel solo. You know what I mean? I'll bring someone that, you know, can help me, and there's no shame in that, you know. And it's kind of that idea, like, don't think of yourself as a burden. Like, someone wouldn't want to go with you if they didn't think they were gonna have fun. So, you know, so kind of get that out of your head. And then, you know, most of the time, you know, when we're asking someone to do stuff, it's very minor, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's not gonna kill them to help us with something little. But, you know, we do have that burden complex that we have to get through. So I say that's the first thing you should tackle, is like that burden complex, like, you know, like, so to kind of get that out of your mind and not be afraid to, you know, ask for help when you need it, you know, especially from people you trust. Like, if they're going with you, they're a friend, like, I wouldn't worry about that. And but sometimes we do have experiences with people in our lives that do make us feel bad, which sets us back. So I'd say, like, just try to surround yourself with people who lift you up emotionally and all that. And then also, yeah, like, just like I started, like I said, if like a cruise, like I did a short one, you know, because I had like, so I probably just, with my chronic illness considerations, am not gonna go to like super like remote places without like nearby healthcare, just because I don't really think that's smart for me. So I think it's, you see people online that do it and you're like, oh, I should do that. But it's just, you know, if you're traveling and all that, it's supposed to be fun. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, you're not, you don't have to feel like you have to do stuff to accomplish it, like, if you're not gonna have fun with it. So I'd say just prioritize fun, is the main thing.
All right, let's switch gears because I find this next topic pretty interesting. What kind of disabled positive advocacy do you do, like around wanting treatments and cures for disability? Because there are many who like who don't want those.
Yes, I know. That's a very interesting topic, because when I was first starting, like, in my title, on social media, I have like disability and rare disease advocate. And at first I was like, should I pick one lane or the other, you know, and be more, you know, narrow and focused. But then I'm like, both are important to me, so I wanted to include both, and both influence what I talk about and have influenced my life experiences. So I think it's kind of just the way we talk about it, and I think it's also the way the people who aren't affected talk about it, you know what I mean? So I tend to use the word treatments rather than cures, because sometimes I think cures is like a good marketing term that people use, like, to raise money. But I think, you know, realistically, like, in most situations, treatment is probably more accurate anyway. And it's interesting, because you know, if like I made a clip, I actually collabed with Laura from the DLC recently on a clip that was called like how to pray for someone without making them uncomfortable. And it was kind of relating to that experience like disabled people face, where like a stranger will come up to them and be like, oh, I pray that you get a cure. And like, you know, you'll get a lot of people that will say, just be grateful, like, they're praying for you. And it's like, yeah, but it's kind of like offensive, because they're just kind of coming at you out of the blue and be like, oh, like, if someone comes to you out of the blue, like, I try to say it to like a non-disabled person. If someone just walked up to you in a store and said, I'm praying for you, you're going to be like, was something wrong? Like, did something wrong with, did something happen to my face? You know what I mean? You're gonna be like, what's wrong? Like, what am I, you know? And then, so that's like the way disabled people feel. It's like, this person's assuming my life isn't good, you know what I mean? And they're only focusing on the struggles. And it's, and that's not to downplay the struggles either, to say like, oh no, we don't have any. It's like, no, we do. It's just like, if you're solely focusing on cure, then you're ignoring the change that could happen. We just choose as a society not to make it happen, which is improving accessibility, you know, improving societal beliefs and stigmas, you know, that all stuff can be changed. Like, we don't need a cure for that. Like, you know, companies to actually hire disabled people, like, that stuff can happen. Like, we don't need to be cured for that. But the reason why I do include it is because, more so probably with like the chronic illness stuff, like, you know, I feel like I could accomplish more if I felt better, you know what I mean? So it's like, I don't want to say like, no, I'm not interested in any treatments at all, because I do feel like a treatment would help me, like, you know, have better quality of life. So I feel like it's kind of good to go at it at both angles, because if assistive technology or a treatment is going to give you better quality of life, help you be more independent, I think there's nothing wrong with being all for that. You know, I think it's non-disabled people projecting that we need a cure in order to live a fulfilled life is the problem. It's not necessarily us being like, yeah, we want treatments just so we can, you know, live a little easier. Like, you know, it's just acknowledging that, you know, a treatment could be in the same category as assistive technology or improving accessibility. It's just, you know, that's kind of how I feel about it. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much.
Oh no, you're fine. How do you tell someone that you want these treatments, but that it's not part of the internal ableism? Or maybe is it part of it?
Yeah, I think it's more just like feeling good, you know. You know, it's like, it's tricky, 'cause like if someone's disability is that they feel nauseous all the time, like that is a disability, and it's like, you know, but like for me, it's just like one part of it. So I'm like, yeah, I'd love to, you know, not have like migraines anymore, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like where I'd love to not have as much fatigue so I can get stuff done, you know what I mean? And another factor is a lot of people do die prematurely, you know, and that's another factor that it's like we want people to live longer, you know, to do what they want to do and accomplish what they want to accomplish. So I think that's important as well to note. I think less of it, like you'll see, like I'll see in some organizations, like some parents of kids with like rare disease or stuff like that will kind of use like, we want to keep them out of a wheelchair. It's like a benchmark where it's like, well, that really shouldn't be the benchmark, because like the wheelchair is not the enemy. The wheelchair is just a tool people use to get around easier. You know, the benchmark should really be like, you know, just to live a full life, like a full life expectancy as anyone else would.
Is there anything else you wanted to discuss today that we haven't covered?
I think we covered a lot. I think we covered like a whole range of things, and I'm really grateful that you had me on, and that we got a chance to connect, because we have like been in similar like communities I've seen like a few different times. So I'm glad we finally got to chat more one-on-one and set this up, and I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking with me. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And
Definitely.
I appreciate all the insights you've provided.
Yeah,
If
no.
people, I'm sorry.
Oh no, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
If people want to connect with you and support what you do, where can they do that?
Sure. So Danielle Vates. It's funny, some people think my name is Danielle Vates, which is fine. But yeah, it's pronounced Danielle Vates. So DanielleE and then Vates. That's on YouTube and TikTok, and then on Instagram it's that as well, but just like an underscore before Danielle Vates, because I'm not that official yet. But maybe after this podcast, I'll be able to, you know, get rid of that underscore. But yeah, it's still there for now.
Well, I will make sure to share everything in the description down below.
Okay,
Once again,
great.
oh, sorry. Once again, I'm Sean Gold. Thank you for watching. Make sure to like, comment your thoughts, and subscribe. Also, make sure the bell is on to be notified of each upload. I'll see you next time on another episode of Crippled by Culture.
Want to listen to Crippled by Culture on your favorite podcast platform? Well, now you can. Crippled by Culture is now available wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search up the show title and make sure you subscribe. Thank you for being a listener.